just a brief something on Vayishlach. I was going to, again, even in Hashkafa, I was a little stone, but I did want to read a passage, finish up stone, but I wanted to read a passage from Akedah Yitzchak, which is really very powerful. So I'm just going to do something very quickly on Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayishlach, we had, of course, the story of Dina, and it's also the story of Dinim, which we did a couple years ago when we learned Sanhedrin. I'm not sure how many people were here then. But I just want to discuss a hashkafic point, you know, of something that comes out of it, which we may have mentioned then, but probably not all aspects of it anyway. And that is as follows. As everybody knows, the Dina story is a fascinating story. Right? Dina is... you know, the object of a crime of some sort. And the story of Shechem. The Shechem goes to Hamor, his father. He wants to intermarry with, or convert to intermarry, whatever it is, with the family of Yaakov Avinu. And then, of course, you have the response of Yaakov Avinu and the response of his sons. And that generates internal strife, you know, between them. And the exchange itself is really very fascinating. So what's I would just want to frame it against the discussion of the Rambam and the Ramban that we discussed much more from a halachic point of view when we learned Sanhedrin, which I guess was like 3 years ago, whoever was here. The question, of course, is in the debate between Yaakov Avinu and his sons, who is right, halachically, right? And that's a straight out, seems to be a straight out argument between the Rambam and the Ramban. So the Ramban, and the argument revolves around, this is why we discuss it in Sanhedrin, it's part of Akdama, around the definition of dinim. What is the obligation of dinim? B'nai Noach have seven required halachos, right? Seven chiyuvim, seven mitzvos. One of them is dinim. That's established in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, right at Daf Nun Vav, Vav Mid Beis. Everybody agrees that one of the Shabbats of Bnei Noach is Dinim, and there's a debate about the scope of Dinim. The Rambam's view was that is that Dinim means the obligation to implement the other six. It means to to apply the judiciary, right, to enforcing the other six mitzvahs, which means that dinim is a different kind of mitzvah than the other six. The six mitzvahs have tochen, basically, and the seventh is the obligation, right, to follow through, to implement, the first six, essentially. That's how the Rambam understands it, and the Rambam understood that the people of Shechem abdicated that responsibility, because they should have punished Shechem, because he was at minimum in violation of Gezel. Gezel is one of the Shevets B'nai Noach. And since they did not, they were all subject to the death penalty, because Shevets B'nai Noach triggers a Chiyuv Misa. And as such, the B'nai Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, and the rest of them, legally within their rights. They did the right thing, because the city deserved to be slaughtered, to be killed. That is the view of the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim. And the Ramban disagrees. Ramban in Vayishlach takes the view, and it's an interesting view in its own right, an ironic but very important view. And that is, Ramban says, Dinim, right, is not just the narrow obligation to implement the other six. Rather, it is a comprehensive, it is the obligation to adopt, and to adhere to a comprehensive legal system. And then the Ramban goes on to really speak very eloquently about what that, and very expansively at minimum, I think also eloquently, about what that system includes. And basically, he describes something that sounds a lot like Chosha Mishpat. Right? He talks about, Dinim of Malva Belova and of other things. It sounds like the obligation of dinim is very comprehensive. Ad kadei kach, that there's a secondary debate, which we discussed at the time, I'll just mention it for a second, and that is between the Rama and the Netziv. The Rama has a tshuva, in which he basically says that it depends what the makar of dinim is. Is it from the word vayitzav or from the word Elokim? That's a debate in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Vavmud Beis, whether or not we learn dinim from vayitzav or Elokim. So the Rama has a fascinating line in a tshuva where he says, and again, as far as I know, he's the first person to say this, it's his own parshanot, really, and that is that if you learn the dinim of dinim from the word vayitzav, so then it's fine to apply any kind of fair-minded legal system. And as if it's just and consistent, you know, and not consistent, I mean not arbitrary. And if it's comprehensive, then it regulates, you know, society, you know, in a way that is, you know, ethical and moral, both. This part mostly dealing with the ethical part. So then that's fine. That's what dina means. However, if the makar is the word Elokim, says the Rama, then really lechatchila at least it should be choshen mishpat etzav, because Elokim, right, implies, you know, again, the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses Elokim as a reference to a dayan samach, right? But we also understand that, you know, that reference, using the same name that is shared by the Rabbanu Shalom, I've made this point in the past. I think the Drosh HaSaran also makes this point, or the Mabit, or both, that, you know, it's not a coincidence that the same word, you know, signifies sometimes the Rabbanu Shalom and sometimes a Dayan. The Dayan is supposed to be the embodiment of, you know, the qualities that make him a proper, let's say, representative of the Rabbanu Shalom. Because, you know, Jewish law is, you know, what halacha is really what, you know, shapes us or inspires us, you know, to aspire to the highest levels attainable by our Tzelem Elokim, lehidamos, to imitate the Rabbanu Shalom. And therefore, if you derive from the word Elokim, the din of dinim, then the dinim should be the one that is like a godly, you know, in other words, a spiritually aspirational civil legal system, and that means choshen mishpat. That's the view of the Rama. The Netziv, in his Perush on the Shiltos, takes very strong issue with this. Number one, he debates, you know, with the Rama. How we paskin? Do we paskin according to the Ma'amar, or the Ryokan Leshlakish, Elokim or Vayitzav? He also wonders whether this is really, he quotes this Rama, and he thinks that it's problematic, because he asks the question, if indeed, according to the Rama, at least according to that Ma'amar, Dinim constitutes Kosher Mishpat, then how can we say things like, U'mishpatim ba'yuda'um, you know, halaluka? Right, we always speak about the uniqueness of Jewish law, even Jewish civil law. Mishpatim is a reference to Jewish civil law. And how can we say things like, you know, afilu dineim kedineinu? Well, kind of that's also problematic, should be problematic. But how can we say things like going to an arkos, ela mishpatim asher tasim lefneihem, lefneim flofnei, velo lefnei akum, or arkos? How can we say that if it's the same thing? The answer to that question, I think, is very important, and it is that, on the contrary, that you can, you know, you can isolate Choshen Mishpat, but if you do that, in other words, if you divorce it from, you take it away from the framework of the rest of Halacha, in other words, if you just see it as a, you know, efficient and even very ethical civil legal system, you know, and you don't see it, you know, as being connected to an Orach Chaim and an Ishus and even a Kodshim and a Taharos, so then in the end of the day, you know, it's a different Kosher Mishpat. And it's still not U'mishpatim ba'yida'um, you know, haleluka. And maybe that's exactly what Chazal meant when they say Eilad Barim, right, Sher Tassim Lefneihem Lefneim Flo Lefnei Arkos, and the Gemara says, you know, in Gittin, that afilu kishidineim you know, kidineinu. So that's like a little snapshot. You might say, oh, dineim kidineinu, that's, you know, but it's not the whole system, so maybe that skews, either it's a kind of a low plug, or it's a chil Hashem, to think that, secular civil law is the equivalent of Jewish law. It is a much bigger, the Nitziv's question is a much bigger question, you know, than the question about filu kishitineim kidineinu. Now, there's a huge difference between saying we take the whole system lock, stock, and barrel, and saying that, you know, there's a particular prat, you know, which has the same halach. For all sorts of reasons, including even that prat itself. But what I'm suggesting is that the bigger idea finds a common ground or common denominator between both of these ideas. And that's what the Ramah will probably tell you is that even if it's the whole system of Chosha Mishpat, you know, but you take that away from its framework, you know, of being integrated, you know, as Kishem Hashem Ekra Havugod Alokeinu, as part of a, you know, integrated system, it just doesn't have that status anymore. And that's the answer to that question. That's a critical idea. In any case, that's the Ramah's view within, I guess, the worldview of the Ramban. The Ramban himself doesn't say that. The Ramban only says that you need to have a very comprehensive legal system. But the irony in the Ramban, of course, is that you would have thought that the more demanding you are in dinim, right, the more, you know, the neglect of dinim would be an egregious, you know, kind of, you know, religious crime. And of course, instead, the opposite is true. For the Rambam, who narrows dinim to the execution of the other mitzvos, right, its neglect triggers a chiyuv misa. And for the Ramban, this is what he's trying to explain, implementing the law, actually, you know, following through, is one of many details. And therefore, even though you're much more ambitious on behalf of, you know, mankind, you know, universal law, you know, by having this kind of expanded notion of what dinin is, right, any particular prat within that doesn't hold the same way. And that, too, by the way, is a mashal, l'mah davar dome, and this is something that the Drosha Saran definitely also says. We've made this point many times in many different contexts, and that is that, again, it's the parallel of what I said before. Afilu kishidineim kidineinu, but I mean even within, you know, a Jewish law perspective. In other words, the question always begs itself, and that is, you know, dar sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, and every single one is mechayev yumisa, right? But these sheva mitzvot themselves are not mechayev yisrael misa. You know, how could it be, to use, you know, Sanhedrin kind of language, you know, mi'ika mida'am, are there things where, you know, non-Jewish law is more chamor than Jewish law, right? Hayitachein, is that possible? But the answer, of course, is, you know, it certainly is possible. It is not just possible, it's true. And there are several ways to understand it. They overlap, and they're not mutually exclusive at all. One is that, you know, if all you have to do is focus on a very narrow couple of requirements, you know, and that's what defines your, you know, humanity, your spirituality, your tzelem Elokim, you know, as opposed to having many, many, many more obligations and therefore many opportunities, you measure or you judge, you know, a person, you know, in a relative way, understandably. So if this is all we require of you, then, you know, then the focus of the emphasis is going to be on that. But it's more than that. If this is all that we require of you, so then these dinim themselves take on or assume a kind of different status and stature, right, than they do in the bigger context. Just, and this to me is like, you know, again, a parallel to the irony, to the understandable irony of the Ramban to begin with. In other words, what the Ramban, unlike the Rambam, is saying is that in the end of the day, right, your obligation is more ambitious, right, much more maximal, therefore obviously we also have greater regard for your spiritual potential and greater requirements of you as a spiritual individual. Right, but having said that, So it's not just, oh, you have more, you know, and therefore every individual piece, you know, is worth a percentage of that, therefore less. We don't not judge you on, you know, every error in the same way. It's not as glaring. You know, this is all we asked of you. It's more than that. It's also that contextually it has a different meaning and a different significance. Just like if you take, you know, Choshe Mishpat out of Kol HaTorah Kula, you know, Choshe Mishpat, you know, attains or assumes a different status, right? Just like if you take Dineim Shem Kedineinu, right, out of context of Choshe Mishpat, it attains a different status, right? The same is true with regard to the individual pieces and the role that they play. It's not just the question of, you know, this is all we need from you, therefore at least, you know, step up and, you know, be counted here. You can't even do that, right? It's more than that. It's the role, you know, in particular, you know, that it plays in the bigger picture. Not just quantitatively, I mean qualitatively. So that's an important idea in the Ramban. The Ramban's view is that Yaakov Avinu was completely you know, right in his scathing critique of his children, especially of Shimon and Levi. And the Ramban says, listen, if Yaakov Avinu was, you know, just scared and he was, you know, emotional at the moment, you know, because he felt that, you know, Shimon and Levi, you know, were jeopardizing, you know, the present and the future, then, you know, in retrospect, at the time that he gave the final brachos in Vayechi, right, you know, with the benefit of perspective, you know, a certain, you know, historical understanding based on what didn't happen, right, he should have been gentler and kinder, especially if they were really holding, you know, the halachic line. They're the ones who, you know, were really, you know, justified in their view. This is the Ramban's argument. The fact that in Vayechi he's even more scathing, more critical than he is in Vayishlach, right? Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas mecher oseham, you know, etc. You know, almost unforgiving, you know, in after all those years. And remember that final legacy in Vayechi, maybe we'll talk more about that also, is a double legacy. It is, you know, a father who is departing from his children, and it's also Yaakov Yisrael, right, who is Lidore Doros, you know, providing a final will and testament and guidance, you know, to what will be Klal Yisrael. If you look in Parshas Vayechi, right, the words, it's almost like dizzying back and forth. You know, Yaakov Yisrael, you know, in the same pasuk sometimes, within the same half pasuk sometimes. It's supposed to be read, you know, on two different levels. So even if he personally felt that Shimon HaLevi, you know, either usurped his authority, endangered Klal Yisrael, whatever it was, right, in the end of the day, if after all those years, you know, his final legacy as Yisrael to Klal Yisrael should have been to compliment them on their, you know, principled decision, not to criticize them, if indeed they were, you know, halachically correct. So that's why the Ramban is convinced that they weren't. You know, it leaves things, you know, to such a point in the Ramban that he can almost not understand the position of Shimon Levi, which he kind of tries to, you know, hint at some sort of justification as well. But of course, this then just turns everything back to the Rambam. And that is, given that the Rambam felt that technically, halachically, Shimon and Levi were correct, which is what he says in Ilchos Malachim, then how do you explain the critique, you know, of Yaakov Avinu? So I just want to speak about that for a couple of minutes. There are different answers that are given. Radvaz speaks about it. Others speak about it in connection with this Rambam. But what I'd like to suggest is, again, a few issues, you know, which I think, again, overlap, but I think are important. Number one, the expression achartem osi, that Yaakov uses, you know, in this context. Again, everybody's speaking in a very principled way, and that's what's so fascinating. Ubnei Yaakov ba'u min ha-sadeh kishamam, v'yis'atzvu ha-anashim, v'yicha lahem ma'od, ki nevala asa b'Yisrael, lishkav es bas Yaakov, v'chein lo yeyaseh. This is very formalistic language. right? It takes the entire episode and it puts it, you know, a totally different level. This is not just personal. It is somewhat personal. It's brothers reacting to the wrong committed to their sister and to the attack, you know, on their family. But ki nevala sabi Yisrael lishkavis bas Yaakov v'chein lo yeyaseh. All of that is formal language, you know, that belongs to Dore Doros, for sure. Anyways, what's fascinating is that, you know, again, you get this later on, but Vayanu b'nei Yaakov v'shkem, it's kamar aviv b'mirma, v'yidaberu, asher timei es dina achosam. Again, very formalistic. Asher timei es dina achosam. Very formalistic language. And even like the way that they talk to the people, lo nuchal la'asos ha'davar hazeh, lo seis ha'sachosenu le'ish asher lo orla, ki cherpa hilanu, ach bezos neos lachem, im tiyu kamonu, l'himol lachem kol zachar. The suggestion for Bris Milah, again, all of this is portrayed as if it is connected to Klal Yisrael Dorei Doros and its requirements. V'nasanu es b'noseinu lachem, es b'noseichem nikach lanu, Riyashavnu itchem vayunu l'am echad. The consequences are l'dorei doros as well. In the final exchange between Yaakov and his sons, so again we get similarly b'nei Yaakov ba'u al ha'chalalim b'yavozu ha'ir asher timu achosam, and so on. And then Yaakov says, "Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon, the Alevi, achartemosi," a very, very unusual term, "lahavisheni biyoshe va'aretz, baknani ubaprizi, v'ani misei mispar, v'nesfo alai v'hikuni, v'nishmarti ani ubesi." Vayomru, and they respond to him, "Hakizona yase esachosenu," and that's the end of it. It's like a very unique Parsha. Right, that's the end of it. So, number one, the expression achartem and lahavisheni are rare expressions, especially achartem, but lahavisheni as well. And it has a connotation of muddying the waters. That's what achartem typically means. I mean, you've taken something in which there was, let's say, moral clarity, and you have muddied the waters, that you've created moral ambiguity. That's number one. Lahavisheni also has that kind of a connotation, obviously. Something reeks, something, a smell is a very powerful thing. Obviously, this has a connotation of chilul Hashem. Some of the Mefarshim explain that even if technically Shimon and Levi were correct about the mitzvah of dinim, right, there are two halachic points that they needed to consider. One was Kil Hashem, right? Acharta Mosi Lahavi Sheni. And the other, of course, was Pikuach Nefesh, right? And that is, that's a double question. Both of these are double questions. Again, that's what Yaakov emphasizes, right? Right? The question is, Vanim Neit Ad Vanim is same as Par. So he's saying two things. And the question is, and this is the overlap question, even if it's true that there's that Bnei Noach who ignore implementing, right, the other six mitzvos have a chi of Misa, right, is that obligation something that is imposed on Klal Yisrael or not? And is it imposed on Klal Yisrael even b'makom chil Hashem and even b'makom bikuach nefesh? These are areas that are totally ambiguous in law. I think last year or 2 years ago, we may have discussed a little bit this question in a different context, that there in Rambam in the end of Perek Ches of Hilchos Melachim, the question how to read it, seems to discuss the question whether or not this is an obligation of Klal Yisrael's or does Bnei Noach are chayiv misa, or Klal Yisrael is obligated to impose upon them the chayiv misa, if possible. Or that's just a mitzvah and a kiyum, or that's a chiyuv, and is that a chiyuv that applies, you know, in all circumstances, including Chilul Hashem, and including Pikuach Nefesh. But I think that the bigger issue, which overlaps with these, is also the question of family and the institution of the Bris Milah itself. Again, in the whole Parsha, it's interesting from the very beginning, Bnei Yaakov bo min ha-sadeh, right, as we discussed, right, ki nevala asa b'Yisrael, lishkav as beis Yaakov, v'chein lo ye'aseh. And then later, ha-kizona, right, ye'aseh es achosenu. Chazal say that, again, Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas v'cheirosehem, right, they're called achim. And Chazal also understand that in the Yosef story, not going to go into that right now, that it's Shimon and Levi, right, who take the initiative against Yosef, because they're the ones who are called Achim. And Yosef is in continuous search, right, for brotherhood, as Achai Elohim Mevakesh. We'll talk more about that in a different context. But in a way, right, the question of the role of the family obligation, but also who speaks for the family, you know, is part of this parsha. So if you look very carefully, right, Yaakov Avinu hears about this first, but the Torah doesn't share with us, you know, V'Yaakov Shama, ki timei es dina bito, right, as a father, he hears about this, u'banav hayu, right, es mikneu basadeh, v'hechrish Yaakov ad boam. So it's a fascinating thing. Yaakov Avinu is the father, right, of this group, of the first Jewish family, you can call it, first, you know, extensive Jewish family, right? And not only that, he's Yaakov Avinu, right? The Bechir Ha'avos. He is Yaakov Avinu Tiferes, right, who combines, you know, the Gevura of Yitzchak, of Pachad Yitzchak, and the chesed, you know, of Elokei Avicha Avraham. Right, so he isn't just, you know, the father here. He's probably the most qualified person on earth, maybe that ever was, you know, to be the father. He's the father, and he's the father of the family, and he's the father of the nation. Again, when they speak about what they're unhappy about, ki nevala asa b'Yisrael, right, this is an expression which is only now beginning to be used, right? They can be concerned about Yisrael because their father, Yaakov, is Yisrael. Kisarisa malakim v'yaman hashim v'tuchal. Right? Lishkavas bas Yaakov, they're the ones who are concerned about the reputation of Yisrael because of what happens to the daughter of Yaakov, v'chein lo ye'aseh, and they're very definitive about it. So again, their outrage, which reflects their family loyalty, as well as their understanding of the ultimate destiny of Klal Yisrael that's at stake here as well, all that is a good thing. But what's missing is already reflected in the contrast, right, between Yaakov's response and their response. Yaakov's response, he's the one who has the, you know, who has the legal, you know, sovereignty, if you will, the authority, you know, to decide what the policy, family policy, Klal Yisrael policy is going to be. And what does he do? He's silent, and he waits till his children return because they're out of town. And he wants to get together a family a meeting and discuss, you know, the, you know, all sides of the equation, you know, the achartem osi, you know, the pikuach nefesh, the hakazona yase es achoseinu, the navala b'Yisrael, right? And they, on the other hand, as soon as they hear about it, respond immediately, B'toras B'nei Yaakov, and in the name of Yisrael, before they even, again, there's no conversation between B'nei Yaakov and Yaakov, Yisrael, here. It's a fascinating, to me, it's a fascinating lacuna in the Torah's presentation of the story. And then they go ahead and they have this, you know, entire, you know, plan, plot, you know, whatever it is. And they're going to associate Vayanu b'nei Yaakov eshchem yeschamar aviv b'mirma. Some view b'mirma positively, with, you know, cleverness. Some view it negatively. My guess would be that it's an intentionally ambiguous phrase. In other words, they meant well. You know, it was a clever plan. You know, it was well intentioned. On the other hand, it identified or associated Mirma not only with Bnei Yaakov, but with Bnei Yaakov and with the halachic symbol, right, that identified, you know, Bnei Yaakov, right? You could either see this as, you know, proper, you know, comeuppance, you know, that the, you know, the symbol of the bris and of Kedushas Yisrael, you know, is going to be the means or the vehicle, you know, for vengeance against, you know, Nivala b'Yisrael, something which is, you know, totally unacceptable. Or you could see it as, you know, potentially at least, in the sense of akartimosi, tarnishing, you know, the bris milah, because the bris milah is a symbol of not only Kedushas Yisrael, but as we've said many times, I think it always bears repeating, of a bris. The idea of a bris is a coordinating principle. It's the idea that there, you know, is a web of, you know, relationships, or there's a web of different facets, right, to the overall relationship, you know, between parties. It doesn't focus on a single issue or a single mutual interest. A real bris, a deep bris, right, is a bris, you know, which, as say, regulates and coordinates, you know, across a whole spectrum of aspect. That's why, again, I've said many times that's why it's a mitasei shesh bakares. That's why, you know, we also say lachniso b'briso shel Avraham Avinu, in addition to the, you know, ala mila, because mila has this additional. That's why so many parshios about mila, because that's why it symbolizes Kedushas Yisrael, because Kedushas Yisrael itself isn't about just each individual discrete obligation. It's about each discrete obligation and the integrity of each performance and obligation and what it brings, you know, to the situation. But it's also about how it all fits in, how all each one fits in, you know, seamlessly, you know, with the other. That's what a bris is. So a chartem OC, by taking the bris milah, which is supposed to, you know, reflect the Kedushas Yisrael in all of its aspects, right, and is about, you know, a complex web of interrelationships, etc., and turning that into a vehicle, not of, you know, heshivulo gemulo barosho. Again, there's a fine line between the two. I don't think it's easy. That's why great men, you know, cross it. Shimon Velevi, despite Yaakov's scathing critique, obviously were great men. And at the end of the day, they made this mistake, and they made the mistake out of a sense of idealism. Right? Hakazona yaseh achoseinu. Like, they feel that they have the high moral ground, which is fascinating, because what Yaakov is accusing them of, achartemosi, is that you've muddied the waters. So muddying the waters and suggesting muddying the waters by turning bris milah into a vehicle of mirma is something that is particularly unacceptable. And you don't need Yaakov Avinu's response, because it's powerful enough if you understand what achartem lahavisheni. In other words, you've acted out of principle, idealism, right? You're patting yourself on the back, you know, thinking, you know, that you have taken umbrage, you know, and you have, you know, again, seized the high religious ground, but you've ignored, you know, pikuach nefesh as a factor. You've ignored chil Hashem as a factor. You've ignored whether or not you have, you know, tarnished bris milah. And you've also ignored the fact that there's a certain hierarchy, you know, which was completely ignored here. And again, the contrast, I think, is very, very striking between Yaakov's, you know, silence and reticence and the immediate, you know, and very decisive and very bold, you know, maybe too bold, action of the brothers. And it's probably not a coincidence, again, that the same Shimon and Levi, you know, jump the gun and in again, probably a very idealistically motivated understanding of historical circumstances, you know, are the ones who perpetrate, you know, one of the most horrible, you know, crimes in our history, you know, upon each other in Bechiras Yosef, say Shimon Velevi. So again, we'll take the approach of the Sfarno and others, you know, which I think makes a lot of sense. That is that it wasn't petty jealousy, Halila. It was an understanding that, you know, that this was something deserved. You could say Rodev, other things. That's the famous view of the Sfarno. Other explanations that have been given. With all the, justification that you can muster to explain the position of the brothers in the Bechiras Yosef, which is Parshas Vayeshev, right? In the end of the day, it's the same brothers in the sense of the leadership part of it. And it's fascinating that it's the corruption, right, of exactly what seemingly motivated, you know, the defense of their sister. It's all about family and brotherhood. So if family and brotherhood, you know, are the ideals that underpin, you know, this action, then how could it, you know, turn brother against brother, and especially Yosef, who, you know, Esachai ani, you know, Doresh, you know, who's looking for his brothers. Again, the use of the word brother, ach, you know, in the context of the Bechiras Yosef, is just omnipresent. Torah is basically saying, you know, in Yehuda, you know, who understands that in the aftermath that he made a terrible mistake, such that in the past also, but, you know, the next parsha is his fulfilling the mitzvah of Yibum, you know. He leaves his brothers and he goes searching for, you know, what brotherhood really, really means. Parsha of Yibum, which is the ultimate chesed and sense of achrayas to a mishpacha, is the parsha in Kitetze, which begins as Kiyeshu Achim, you know, Yachta. So the point is that Yaakov Avinu's critique, Shimon Velevi Achim Kalei Hamas Mecherosehem, is that they basically corrupted, not intentionally, but, you know, sincere people can cause a lot, a lot of problems and heartache, and can set back an ideology as well. That's why you have a hierarchy of authority. That's why you need, proper consultation, you know, et cetera, to channel idealistic impulses, you know, in a constructive way. So Shimon Velevi Achim, that's good, but Kalei Hamas Mecherosehem. And what they did with Yosef is a great example of that. And in turn, it justifies, you know, Yaakov Avinu's critique, which he repeats in the end of Vayichi, because he wasn't less machmir on the value of Achva. It's the opposite. He was just more careful in implementing Achva, right, in a way that was going to be conducive to the destiny of Klal Yisrael. So in the end, we'll go back to the Rambam's perspective, you know, which is the Rambam really held that on a certain level, you know, Shimon Velevi were justified in what they did. Right, they had a very strong basis, you know, for their action. But Dafka, you know, that makes Yaakov Avinu's rejection of what they did even more powerful. Not because you turned your back on the halacha, Chalila, but because the halacha is the first place that you look. And it's the foundation of your actions. But in a complicated, you know, situation, you know, where there are other consequences, other halachic consequences as well, right, the ignoring of those other consequences, you know, is not something that, you know, brings honor to halachic loyalty or fidelity, in the end, it just, you know, constitutes a narrow and a dangerous, you know, application. So dafka, because there was a foundation, you know, for that very reason, Yaakov's emphatic, you know, critique, you know, looms even larger, and is a Musar Haskel of how decisions are supposed to be made. Okay, we'll stop, but we have to get Mincha, right? We did Mincha before.